This is the Apple This Extra.
Welcome to Apple This Extra number 45. I'm Jamie Pauls, and this evening, as we record, I am joined by my co-host and cohort, Scott Davert. Scott, how are you this evening?
Hey, Jamie, I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Doing great. And the reason we are here is because we are joined by none other than Mr. Rob Meredith. Many of you have heard Rob on a podcast from a few years ago. Maybe a certain Larry Scootcon did, kind of what I like to call the reality TV for blind people. Rob, welcome to Apple This.
Hey, Jamie. Thanks for having me.
So, Rob, to kind of start out, you've been with APH a long time. Do you have a title? I mean, are you just kind of chief cook and bottle washer over there? Or what do you do?
Oh, I have a real interesting title, a programmer. technically, I think it's programmer 3, but I try to leave the 3 out because that makes it even less interesting.
Fair enough. Well, as much as I want to talk about other things like Studio Recorder and Money Talks, we won't because they are not iOS or Mac related in any way.
Right.
But the thing we're talking about today is actually really cool and something that has been anticipated for a long time in the blind community. Those who use iOS, those who use Android are already familiar with this program. Nearby Explorer. Talk to us about, first of all, when did that start being developed and what platform, and actually I'm curious about what device, because I know APH has a lot of devices that it's designed. What devices did it work on first?
Well, the original goal of Nearby Explorer was to provide a GPS navigation app for our, at the time, Braille tablet, which was the Braille Plus 18.
I remember
this
that.
This was in 2010 timeframe, maybe.
Okay.
And a team began to develop Nearby Explorer. At the time, I wasn't part of that team. They brought me on board in 2011. And at the time, I didn't really care what it looked like because we didn't have a display on our device. It was a Braille device. Mm-hmm. And at one point, Larry Scootcon said, we need to make this work on phones. And I was like, well, okay. I'll keep that in mind, but I thought our primary goal was the note taker. So I kind of angled towards both, and we did, in fact, come out with our note taker. And we released it to the Android market in early 2013. And it's done pretty well. It was kind of a groundbreaking app at the time. You know, it's a long time ago, really, now, if you think about it, over 3 years. And it served us well, and a lot of people are still using it today, and we have had requests over the years to bring it to the iOS platform, but at the time, we were deeply entrenched in the Android business.
Sure.
And there wasn't really any resources available to do that or, you know, so much motivation at the time, but things change, and we got enough requests that we said, okay, maybe we should really do this, and then we got out of the note-taker business, and that freed up a little more time, and yeah, we were able to port this over to iOS in about 14 months. And I would say it's probably 90% of the Android version right now.
That's great. I know you could probably teach a class on this, but we'll try to do the big picture view. What were some of the challenges of iOS as opposed to Android, for better or for worse, maybe?
It's an interesting question. I was starting from scratch. I had never programmed an Objective-C or done anything with it. I had used an iOS device. I got an iTouch in 2010 at work and used it and was pretty excited about it. And it wasn't till last summer that I had my first experience with trying to program for iOS. And it was difficult. In fact, I used Apple This a lot to read some articles and get some great ideas on some of the challenges and solutions.
Great.
And we brought it over by hand, basically. There was really not much we could – there was some theory and a couple of functions we could use, but they're entirely different enough that there wasn't much help in that area. So it was almost like writing it from scratch. The advantage was that we knew what we wanted. We knew how we wanted it to look. We knew the functionality. Some of that functionality was difficult to achieve on iOS. iOS traditionally doesn't deal with any kind of menu, hamburger menu, sometimes referred, or the context menus that we use in Nearby Explorer. And as a result, I tried to shy away from those kind of constructs since they're not so popular on iOS. But in the end, we had to go with a context menu because we have so much functionality buried under each option that we had to drop that in there. But it still has an iOS look with the tabs and some buttons at the bottom. In fact, the screen layout's quite a bit more modern. The Android screen layout was written originally for Android 2.2, which is pretty old now. And can probably use a little updating, but we had anytime you get a chance to have a clean, fresh start, you do things a little bit better and skip some things you wouldn't have done in the past. So it worked out great.
Okay. Well, why don't we do this? I tend to travel more by vehicle. Scott does a lot of travel, well, probably both vehicle and pedestrian as well. So, Rob, why don't we go ahead and have you show us the screen and start talking about the app, and then maybe Scott and or I can kind of chime in with some questions as we go.
Okay.
Unlock button. Unlock. Nearby Explorer. Nearby. Nearby
Kentucky,
Explorer.
Kentucky, Jefferson County, Louisville. Frankfort Avenue, eastbound 7:30 p.m. 31 Shelbyville Road, Middletown.
Okay, so Nearby Explorer is relatively simple. It has a bunch of items on the main screen that we call the home screen that are switches, and you turn these on and off based on your preference, and these are basically different aspects of geolocation. So you might have your country, your state, your zip code, anything down to the nearest place or the speed that you're moving. And the last thing we heard, well, I'm jumping ahead. Let me just start at the top and we'll head down the screen here. So we have the title at the top.
Nearby Explorer heading.
Then we have
United States.
I'm going to move right to the
17 top.
I'll move right to the switches here.
Radius up. Country United States. Switch button off.
So there's our country.
Double tap to toggle setting. Actions available.
Generally, you would probably leave that turned off, as you most likely know which country you're in.
State Kentucky. Switch button on. County Jefferson County. Switch button on. City Louisville. Switch button on. Zip code 40206. Switch button off. Heading. Switch button on. Street number 1839. Switch button off. Double tap to toggle setting. Actions available. Street name Frankfort Avenue. Switch button on. Approaching. Switch button on. Guidance, switch button, on. Nearby eastbound, 7:30 p.m., 31 Shelbyville Road, Middletown, switch button, on. Nearby position 40 yards southeast, switch button, off. Watch, switch button, off. Speed, switch button, off. Altitude, switch button, off. Accuracy, switch button, off. Vertical accuracy, switch button, off. Streets, button.
Okay, so those are the main items. And some of those that aren't maybe as explanatory.
Nearby position 40 road heading. Street name heading. Switch button on.
Heading is direction
Double
you're heading.
Toggle set heading. Switch button on.
Heading is only valid when you're actually moving. That's why it's blank at the moment. Heading is also used when you point the phone in compass mode to learn about the streets and the direction you're facing.
Street number 18. Street name.
Then
Franklin,
down here,
approaching. Guidance. Approaching.
We have approaching, and this is the next intersection you're approaching. And it handles through streets, streets that run only on the left and streets that run only on the right, and tries to tell you that information as you approach an intersection.
Guidance.
And again, these are all things that can be turned on and off. That's an important.
Right.
Yeah.
It sure is. You, the general mode of operation is to set these how you'd like them and then lock your phone and just begin to travel. And the phone tells you what changes as you move. And then if you need to change anything, you just unlock it and hit it real quick, and you're back in business.
Nearby eastbound, 7:30 p.m., 31 Shelbyville Road, Middletown. Switch button on.
Okay, the nearby item tells you your nearest POI, point of interest. In this particular case, though, it happens to be a bus stop. And it gives you the direction and the time and the name of the route of the particular bus that we're near.
Nearby eastbound, 7:30 p.m., 31 Shelbyville Road, Middletown. Switch button on.
And then the next one is the position of that of the nearest item relative to you.
Nearby position 40 yards southeast. Switch button off.
Okay.
Watch. Switch button off.
Watch is a sort of a preferred point of interest that you'd like to monitor constantly. You can set that to either your current location or any of the POIs that you search for or a favorite that you have saved, and watch that as you move around. And it tells you the distance and direction from that location when you have it set.
Speed, switch button off.
It vibrates then as well, doesn't it?
It vibrates when you point at it, yes.
Okay, gotcha.
And I'm going to show that because we're down to the more mundane options now, like speed,
altitude. Accuracy, switch button, vertical accuracy.
Accuracy and vertical accuracy.
Vertical.
Let's talk about the pointing aspect. We have two different ways you can orient the phone to point it and gather different types of information. So the first we call geobeam, and this is when you hold the phone in a landscape orientation and point the camera end to see the places around you. And as you enter geobeam, you hear a sound, and then you can begin to sweep.
American Printing House for the Blind, 70 yards northwest.
So there's APH.
We buy houses cash. Away for a day, 210 yards west. Bar library, 60 yards west. Sweet Surrender Dessert Cafe, 200 yards west.
And you'll notice that the phone's vibrating as I hold it and point to these places.
Willis Klein Commercial Sales, 250 yards south.
The vibrating tells you that you're actually pointing at the place. When you're not pointing at any places, you get no sound or vibration. And you'll also notice that there's a
Willis
beep.
Klein Commercial Sales, 250 yards south.
There's a beep before these.
We buy houses cash LLC.
And that beep indicates the relative distance of the place you're pointing at. So the higher the beep, the closer the place. So you can do a quick sweep and sort of get a general idea
Willis
of how
Klein.
Far these places
we buy
are.
American Printing, Kentucky School for the Blind, one. Suites, eastbound, Clifton Baptist Church, 0.2 miles.
So
Estes Public, Clifton Baptist Church, 0.2
It would seem that church is probably the furthest
southeast.
Place from us, since it has the lowest beep.
Willis Klein.
Almost sounds like the progress tones of a certain screen reader.
Oh, yes, it does, actually.
It certainly does.
I forgot about that.
I'm glad it's on a desktop access app, though.
Exactly, right?
All right. And then there's another aspect of geobeam, and this is what we call geobeam flat mode. That's when you hold the phone with the screen pointing up. And what that does is only gives you the nearest location when you point the end of the phone. So I'm now doing my 180-degree sweep.
Eastbound, 7:30 p.m., 31 Shelbyville Road, Middletown, 40 yards southeast.
And there's the nearest thing, which happens to be a bus stop. And again, the phone does the pitch and the
Eastbound,
vibration.
Eastbound, 7:30 p.m., 31 Shelbyville Road, Middletown, 40 yards southeast.
And the objective of this is to hold the phone in flat mode and then try to get closer to the place if you're trying to find it. That's why we use the nearest place by default. If you have a watch set, however, or if you have set a destination for turn-by-turn directions, then geobeam flat mode uses that location rather than the nearest place as the flat mode location.
So it's a little bit, I'm assuming you're familiar with Blind Square. It's a little bit kind of like the warmer, colder feature in Blind Square, only you get a heck of a lot more information this way.
Right. I'm not terribly familiar with Blind Square. I have it, and I've used it some, but yeah, that's basically the idea.
Okay. Yeah, it seems to me like this is a little bit more, it gives you a little bit more information, you know, because it gives you where it is exactly and what it is and, you know, the distance from it.
Great.
So that's really helpful information. Now, the question I have, and, well, first of all, you probably should know that as I'm listening to this, I'm picturing how this would look on a Braille display, because that's what I primarily use, because I can't really hear the speech.
Okay.
So my question is, with the vibration,
eastbound,
is there a different...
Eastbound, 7:35 p.m., 15 Market Street, Holiday Manor, via...
Map.
How rude.
Nearby Explorer. Pause. But 50%.
I'm going to pause Nearby Explorer.
Pause. Button. Pause.
And that stops the GPS, right?
Yeah, and what happened there is that Yes, and the next bus time change is why we got that update.
Oh, okay.
We're near that bus stop, and that bus has passed, and now it's time for the next one.
Interesting.
Freaked me out earlier because I couldn't figure out why it was doing that, and I remember, oh, yes, of course, we're live updates. So,
right.
But, yeah, so the Braille display issue, we have not really begun to delve into all the possibilities of making the Braille display access better. Right now, it will basically follow VoiceOver as you review the screen, so you would be able to focus on an item. It doesn't seem likely that we'll ever be able to have it do anything with the Braille display with the phone locked, which is usually typically how we have people use Nearby Explorer. But we are thinking of different screen layout options that might make Braille display access a little bit more convenient. For example, maybe we would have a screen where all the interesting items that you have turned on are just in a single box, and you would be able to navigate.
That's
more a different layout, and that's on the roadmap for the future.
So when you're doing the self voicing here, I noticed you're using Alex as your voiceover voice, and then Samantha as the, I guess it's self voicing.
Yes.
Is that information being sent to the Braille display at all, or no?
No, it's only whatever Alex says is sent to the Braille display in the usual way.
Okay. I just wasn't sure if it was coming through as an announcement on the Braille display or not. And then the other thing that I was wondering, and maybe you've already done this, you said the phone vibrates, right? When you hone in on something, if you will.
Yes.
Is the vibration pattern different, or is just the earcon different in terms of how close or far away that point of interest is?
Just the earcon is different. Apple doesn't seem to want people to use different patterns of vibration. At least they haven't opened it up as a public API. So I was unable to do anything very interesting with that.
Okay.
If that ever becomes available, we would certainly like to change the methodology used there. But basically, you get a single
Eastbound
pulsing vibration.
7:35 p.m.
Resume.
Market Street
Pause.
Holiday
button.
Manor via Veterans Hospital, 40 Let's yards see. South. American Printing House for the Blind, 70 yards northwest.
So it's like that.
Huh. Okay. And, I do like that, you know, if you have the ability to hear speech, you really can. I mean, the amount of customizable options that this thing allows you to say, you know, oh yeah, I want to know my speed, and I want to know my direction of travel, and you know, I'm going to just set it up so that I can, you know, hone in on one specific location. If that's all you want, that's all you'll hear once you lock the screen.
Right.
I imagine that also saves on battery life too.
It does tremendously.
Let's talk about maps for a bit. The onboard maps. 4 gigabytes, right?
Yes, just over 4.
Okay.
If you have an 8 gig phone, I would not buy this app.
Right.
We try to be really upfront about that in our product description. If you have 16, it's going to be a little tight unless you really don't do much else.
Yeah.
32, I'd imagine, would be comfortable for most people, and we use 64 generally at work.
Okay.
The maps get downloaded when you first buy the app, and it takes a good 20-30 minutes to get those installed.
Right, and that's going to depend on your internet connection, how fast it is.
Yeah. We also allow you to use cell data if you're in a situation where there actually are people who don't have internet connection at home and need to use the cell data to pull that down. I wouldn't recommend that for most people, but if you have a plan that permits that, then that's perfectly fine too.
Now, with the so you download the maps when you first get the app. Are they ever updated, or how does that happen? Because, you know, as time goes by, points of interest, of course, in different
Eastbound
locations are going to change.
Eastbound 840 p.m. 31 Shelbyville Road, Middletown.
Well, if you want to get that next bus, you better go for it.
That's right.
Altitude, I'm gonna accurate, apps, nearby eastbound 84 off.
Turn that off. there we go. So map updates, they will be likely provided through another, you know, basically what would happen is we'd have an update of a Nearby Explorer, and it would know that there's new maps to check for, and then you would have an opportunity to download them. We don't really have a formalized schedule for map updates at the moment. these kind of things always lag behind a bit. We get our map sources. The maps are actually Navtech maps, but then we have an SDK that we license that uses those maps. And so the people that license the SDK have to build the maps and send them to us. And so there's often a 2 or 3 quarter lag in that process. These maps are actually the last quarter of 2015, which we consider in this kind of a situation to be pretty recent. But yes, we will have map updates in the future.
Now with the licensing and things, I'm assuming that's costing you guys more money to upkeep, right? Like as you get new versions of it, you have to pay more fees. I'm assuming if that's the case, are you still going to be offering these as free updates to customers when they come out, or how is that process going to work?
We don't have any plans at the moment to charge for map updates.
Okay. So, and I guess this is as good a time as any to talk about the price, $79, correct? As of this recording,
yes, for $79.99. Yes.
Okay, $79.99. And of course, people are always wondering about things like, I know that there was a light version for Android or possibly a subscription-based model, that sort of thing.
Yes. We, as on the Android platform, we decided to do the what one might call the paid version first and get that out of the way. It's probably the easiest one to do and gives us the most functionality. The online version, as we call it, for Android has done really well, the free one. There will at some point be a either less expensive or free version of Nearby Explorer for iOS. I don't have a time frame or really a feature set at the moment, but we continue to investigate the possibility of either doing what we did on Android, which was basically to use Google as an address provider and Google Places as a point of interest provider, or to possibly use some variation of OpenStreetMap data downloaded to the device, for example, to provide a less expensive or free version.
Now, is the $79.99 price, is that an introductory thing, or is it staying at that price as far as you know?
As far as I know, it will stay. In fact, we reduced the Android version from $99 to $79.99 in tandem with the iOS release to make it even playing field for everybody.
That's good. Yeah, you show any sort of favoritism on one platform or another, and it upsets a lot of people.
Wouldn't go well.
No.
So let's talk a bit about searching and maybe do a search and talk about the types of searches and then maybe get into a little bit of virtual mode versus actual travel, that sort of thing.
Okay.
I guess my first question, if you're in pedestrian mode, obviously you are going to probably search fairly close to your location. But if you, for example, if Scott knows he's going to go to another state, is there a way to actually search more than 30 miles from your location?
That's a good question. The answer is yes. It's not as convenient as we would like at the moment. There's two reasons for that. With onboard maps, search larger than 30 miles radius takes a relatively long time. And the other reason is our primary search provider, which is currently Google Places, has a roughly 30-mile limit. And there's some exceptions, and there may be some things we can do in the future to make that better. At the moment, if you search for a street address, we use Apple to do that, and that can be all over the world.
Right.
But generally, searches are limited to 30 miles. But the good news is you can find the city and state of the place first and then do a search from there. And then so you basically carry your 30-mile point to another location.
Okay.
So if you're in virtual explorer mode, you could say, for example, I'm going to North Carolina later this month. Would I be able to look with and somehow use virtual explorer mode from where I'm at currently on Long Island? Would I be able to explore what is in the area of where I'll be at this point?
Oh, yeah, no problem with that, Scott. It's very easy to do. We could even try that if you'd like.
I don't have the zip code in front of me, but I know it's in Charlotte.
Okay, Charlotte is a. That's all I need.
Search 500 yards. Bar library. Library 60 yards west, 1839 Frankfort Avenue, Louisville.
So I opened up the search screen, which is accessed by a button at the along the bottom of the main screen.
Mm-hmm. Search field.
And at the top, double we have a search field. Edit. I'm just going to double tap that and speak Charlotte, NC. Let's see here.
Okay.
Charlotte, NC.
Inserted Charlotte, NC.
Then we hit the search button at the bottom.
Search. Search. Charlotte, Mecklenburg County, North Carolina, 342 miles southeast.
And that's our only result. So I'm going to press, I'm going to double tap that, and that gives me a context menu.
Charlotte, search from here. Go to.
And my two choices are search from here and go to. Generally, it's more convenient to just go to the place, and that's what we'll choose now.
North Carolina,
nearby
Mecklenburg
Explorer,
County,
country,
Charlotte,
United States.
South
Switch
College
button,
Street,
off.
30 yards southeast.
Okay, so now we're on South College Street in Charlotte, North Carolina. And everything we talk about now applies to this location. So as I point the phone, we hear about places there rather than here.
Sherpa, 340 yards southwest. Mint Museum Uptown, 250 yards north. Babson.
So yeah, we're there. And from that location, we can search. We can just open up the search screen again.
Search button. Search. Search 500 yards. The West in Charlotte. Lodging 100 yards southeast, 601 South College Street, Charlotte.
There we go. And it's just like being there. And you can look at the transit feeds for that location as if you were there and learn about the bus routes and do all those things. And you can also attempt to walk the streets with virtual navigation.
Is there a way to somehow... I'm sorry if I'm asking something you can't do, but I haven't been able to use the app, so I'm just not sure. Is
right.
there a way to somehow get that information on my Braille display? If not, could there be a way, you know, maybe that would actually be a good place to start with the screen that you were talking about so that you could virtually explore with, you know, Braille support? Because what I'm noticing now is the only thing you're getting is the self-voicing. Is that, are you able to navigate the virtual mode with the actual voiceover screen reader so you can read it in Braille, or is that only supported with self-voicing?
You can, it works just fine with voiceover. In fact, I'll give a demo of that now.
Nearby Great. Explorer, zip code 28202, switch button off.
So I'm back at the home screen.
Double tap to toggle setting, actions available.
Each of these has actions, and if I pick the action, I get a...
Show menu
action.
Save location as favored.
And on each of these menus is different depending on the item you pick, but on each of the menus also has some things in common. And one of those common items happens to be virtual navigation.
Set location as watch. Enable virtual navigation.
So I'll go ahead and pick that.
Enable virtual nav search button.
And what happens is the screen gets divided into thirds, and at the top we have the switches that we had before with their current statuses listed, but then toward the bottom of the screen there's a navigation pad.
City Charlotte switch button.
So for example, there's our city, but if
double
I pull,
tap to toggle setting,
pull my finger down a little bit,
north,
there's
button,
my north button,
west button, east button, south button, follow roads switch button on,
and a follow roads
double
switch.
Tap to toggle setting,
and the follow roads switch just either if that's turned off, then the app moves true north, for example, rather than following the road that you're on. If it's on, which most people need, then it attempts to follow the road as you move.
Right.
So I can hit north now.
North.
Heading southeast. South College Street. Heading
north.
Northeast. East Stonewall Street ahead 60 yards.
So we're actually moving northeast because we're following the curve of the road.
North.
East
north.
Stonewall Street ahead 40 yards.
And it's telling us about our next intersection. And if I had...
County Mecklenburg, zip, street see. Number, street name, nearby the West in Charlotte Lodging, switch button, off.
I'm going to turn nearby on, back on. We had,
toggle setting.
We had turned it off earlier to avoid the bus stop changing.
On.
Now it will tell us
north,
what's nearby
button.
As we move.
Near
north.
The West in Charlotte Lodging.
North.
Heading north. East Stonewall Street.
North.
Heading northwest. South Tryon Street ahead 130 yards. Near Fuel Pizza Restaurant.
So it tells us the places that we're passing as we move virtually. As, along with, you know, if we had the transit feed for this city, then it would tell us about the bus stops we pass, and it would, we can get more detailed information about nearby, for example.
Nearby position. What? Nearby position.
We could turn the nearby position item on.
On.
And we continue
north
to move.
Button.
Fuel pizza 130 yards at 4 o'clock.
Now it tells us where the restaurant is relative to us as we move.
North.
South Tryon Street ahead 80 yards. Near Babson Capital Management LLC Finance 130 yards at 1 o'clock.
So we can tell from that 1 o'clock information that the place happens to be on the side of the street we're walking on, and, we're approaching it.
Wow. So it's just like being there.
Right.
Now, is that information anywhere on the screen that VoiceOver can read, or no? Is that only being sent through the self-voicing?
It's all here.
Nearby Babson Capital Management LLC Finance. Okay. Switch button on. Nearby position 130 yards at 1 o'clock. Switch button on.
I get it. Okay.
Tap to toggle setting.
Oh, yes.
So when you go to the switch, when you go to the different switch buttons, that's where the information is with VoiceOver then.
Right. They're actually live statuses that are constantly updated. And regardless of the status of those switches, you can have those switches off, in other words, and still read the information. It just won't self-voice it, but it's all there at all times.
Gotcha. All right. Well, thank you for that. That's very helpful. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jamie. Oh.
No, you're fine. One of the things that I noticed from reading in the user manual, which, by the way, is phenomenal, and anyone who knows APH products know you guys really do some great documentation.
Yes, they do.
With all of your products. At the bottom of the home screen is a help tab, and that's where people can find the user guide. Something about, if I have this correct, depending on the GPS accuracy, sometimes you don't know what side of the street something is on. Do I have that right?
Yeah, there's been a little bit of confusion about the side of the street issue. I want to clear some of these up. The first of all, pedestrian mode only applies to when you're getting turn-by-turn directions. There is no real operating mode that's called pedestrian mode or driving mode or non-pedestrian mode or anything like that. So when you get directions to a place, you need to be concerned about whether you're in pedestrian mode or not. And that basically has the app avoid highways, for example, and not be concerned with the directionality of one-way streets if you're in pedestrian mode. But that's the only time that terminology would apply. The second issue that's come up is what side of the street is the destination on that I'm getting directions to? And it does attempt to guess at that. There's no official way to know for sure the side of the destination. The reason is because places are marked semi-randomly. There's no standard for how to mark a place. Sometimes they're marked in the middle of the street. Sometimes they're marked a little closer to the side of the street where the business resides. Sometimes they're marked at the door of the business, which may be in deep in a parking lot. So it's kind of hard to tell in a lot of cases the side of the street. And when we can't tell, we just don't announce. You know, we don't speculate. We just don't say. If we're reasonably certain that we know the side of the street, we give that to you both at the time you set the destination and at the time you are approaching the business or place.
There's also some great information about in the user guide about things like how highways are numbered, how houses are numbered on blocks, generally speaking, of course.
Yes.
Some information that even if a person didn't necessarily use the app, you might still find very informative.
Right. Absolutely.
So that's excellent.
Yeah, there was a lot of I read the manual. That's how I was able to really get an idea of what it does. But it's really great to have you on to demonstrate it here. So appreciate you doing that part of it. One of the things for me that I thought was really great about it is for a speech user, you could just, set pretty much anything up you want, but there's got to come a point where too much information is not a good thing. Like, I would think the device would go crazy if you turned everything on.
Absolutely, it would. In fact, you would not get very far before you were badly behind suddenly. And you would think that you were maybe a mile down the street when you really weren't. So we attacked that in a couple ways, and we hope to improve the situation. One of the ways we attack that is we, of course, have people turn off things they don't need, especially when you're driving. So if you, like, for example, you may not need to know the relative position of the place because it's just an extra, it'll say 40 miles west or 40 yards west, 40 yards east. So we generally recommend that if you're driving, you might turn that off. Mm-hmm. It could be you don't need to know about nearby places at all if you're driving. You may decide to just point the phone when you need to know. And GeoBeam works regardless of the setting of the nearby switch, so they're basically unrelated events. So if you just need to know, you can point. You may not need to know heading. Then again, you may need to know these things. And so if you do need to know them, there's options as well. For example, the way Google Places works is the radius that you use for the search is extremely important. So Google Places only gives you 20 useful results on a search call. And what governs the type of places you get is the radius. So if the radius is very small, you're going to get perhaps 20 local, very small businesses, holes in the wall you'd never even heard of. If the radius is large, you're going to get major institutions. And the larger the radius, the less likely you are to get many results. It's probably more of a hump. So if the radius is extremely small, probably not many results. If the radius is extremely large, not many results. So there's a happy medium in there somewhere that you can tune as you move, as you drive, to find up your comfort level and the kind of information you need.
Well, that's really interesting. I didn't know that about Google Places. Do you have any idea how that compares with using Foursquare instead of Google Places?
Okay. If you use Foursquare, it's not as clear cut to me. In fact, I'm not really sure that they do much with radius. They do something, but it's not as obvious. The difference is with Foursquare, you get 50 results maximum. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot deeper pool. You can still turn the radius. In most cases, probably with Foursquare, you would start on the lower end of turning the radius down so that to get less places. But there may be situations where it's similar to Google Places, but it doesn't seem that similar to me.
Yeah, I remember going through the course, what the type of things you're going to get are totally different from the two as well. I mean,
absolutely. You
know. I remember when I was using a different app, and we had different sources for data, and I chose Foursquare, and it said 200 yards south to my dumpy house. I'm like, oh, well, I guess somebody doesn't like their apartment.
Right. So I'm curious about vehicular travel. I suppose if you're going to take a 100-mile trip, you might want to go ahead and use Google Maps or Apple Maps. But what would be a good use case for using Nearby Explorer in a vehicle?
Okay. Well, you're going to be able to get a little bit more information about the trip as you're making it. So if you really want to kind of sightsee, as it were, you can turn on, you know, customize your nearby places radius and
yeah.
And point the phone as you move, and you know, lock the phone and continue to get updates, those sorts of things. It can give turn-by-turn directions, but you may choose to use a different turn-by-turn navigator and still keep Nearby Explorer on to do the sightseeing aspect.
Okay. I hadn't thought about using two oh, yes. solutions at once. So next time I go to Branson, I'll be able to know what all of the theaters nearby are as we
right.
Which is actually a good example because you can't drive very fast down there. So generally yeah. speaking, so where there actually might be enough time for me to actually get real-time information. I'm kind of excited about using it in that situation, honestly. I also assume I was thinking about someone who takes Uber or cabs or something a lot, and maybe you just kind of want to make sure that you're not being driven around in a circle.
Right.
You kind of want to make sure, you know, a little
it's great
security
for that.
That way. Yeah.
It's great for that.
Yeah. Okay.
It's I think even if the driver hears that you're using it, you know, you may even just be preventing them from even considering the idea because they know that you know where you're
right.
going.
Yeah. And maybe how fast they're going at some point, right? And it's like, hey.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I love to know how fast people are going. If you get a little bored, you can just switch that on for a sec and see what's going on.
You might know better how fast they're going than they are. They do.
That's true. That's exactly right. So there are literally, I think, it would be safe to say, too many options to cover in this discussion. Before I transition, Scott, is there anything that you would like to ask that we maybe haven't covered yet?
Yeah, there actually is.
Okay.
I go into Manhattan a lot, you know, several times a week. I don't live there, but I go there very often. And one of the things I've noticed is that with a lot of the different apps is the canyon effect, where I'm in Midtown Manhattan. There are tons of tall buildings around, and it might give me a location that's 10 blocks from where I'm at. Have you guys tried the Nearby Explorer in that type of environment, and how have your results been? And my reason for asking specifically is all the other options that are out there, you know, you really don't have offline maps, and I'm wondering how the offline map option actually would apply to a situation like this.
Unfortunately, it doesn't seem like the offline maps would help, because it's really a problem with the GPS receiver rather than the maps. Mm-hmm. So I would imagine it would just throw you all over the place. It would just be a little less less on your battery to do so in this particular case.
Okay.
But and no, we have not. We don't have that experience here, so we have not really witnessed that enough to. But there really probably wouldn't be much we can do. The only thing we can recommend in a situation like that is to try a different external GPS receiver. Some of them may be a little more sensitive than others, or maybe able to track a little better. But I don't really have that much experience with that sort of travel.
Okay. Do you know? Do you have any particular kind of GPS receiver that you would recommend for somebody that's using, would like to try that, or maybe has an iPod?
The Bad Elf makes some GPS receivers for iOS devices. There's one that plugs right into the Lightning port, which would probably be great for like an iPod Touch. And then there's one that also works over Bluetooth. And there's a couple companies that make the Bluetooth style one, but I'm only familiar with the one Lightning format. And we've used them in testing. I don't have a lot. There is a scenario that I have found where the external receiver does work better. It turns out on the bus with my iPhone 6, if I put it in my pocket, I almost cease getting GPS updates entirely, which is a surprise to me because it has worked with other devices in the past a lot better. I did, in fact, try the Bad Elf Lightning Connector receiver with the phone in my pocket and had better results. The downside is I had to take my phone out of the case to do so. It's small, but it's not quite small enough to deal with a lot of the case issues that one would have.
Right. Yeah, that could definitely be something. But I guess Bluetooth might help with that, right? If you get a Bluetooth receiver instead of a one that connects to your Lightning port.
It would, because then you could wear the Bluetooth receiver on your head and everybody would see it. And you would also see the satellites.
That's line of sight, right?
Right, right. Actually, you could put it in a shirt pocket, for example, where you might have the phone in a pants pocket, and it would definitely improve reception in a scenario like that.
Yeah, I remember when I had a receiver, the ability to clip it to the shoulder strap on my Braille display made a huge difference. You know, it was much more accurate in those types of situations than, you know, any kind of internal GPS receiver that you might have.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. The way the certification works, Apple has to approve various Bluetooth GPS receivers so that the amount of receivers is not as broad as it is on the Android side. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure about the quality. We have some really nice ones we like on the Android side. I haven't been able to use those on iOS, unfortunately. And the ones we do have, I haven't used as extensively to determine if they're really that much better. But they're reasonably, I think they're around $70 roughly for a solution like that.
And depending on your user case, it might very well be really worth, you know, the money. The other thing that I could see where this really, this offline maps mode could really come in handy is I used to hike in the foothills and stuff like that up in the Rocky Mountains. There's no cell coverage up there, but you could still, you know, put down, you know, points of interest that are in the area and still have access to whatever you want, even though you don't have cell coverage, which is really nice.
You could. Let me talk about that a little bit. What would happen in that scenario is everything would the road network would be of no value. So you would have really no idea where you are. The street would be unknown and no address. The country would obviously be valid in the city, state, and probably the zip code. But you could lay down favorites, and those would be valid, and name them whatever you wish, and then you'd be able to point to those favorites, know your relative distance between favorites. As you moved around, those favorites would pop up in the nearby area. See, the nearby item doesn't only concern itself with POIs, but also your favorites and bus stops, or any combination. So if you don't want to know about nearby places, just your favorites, you can turn off nearby places and just know about favorites as you move. So it would be great for that, and you could also use GeoBeam to point to them and those kinds of things. The turn-by-turn direction stuff, I should mention, as we're talking about off-road concerns, is only useful for on-road locations. So if you you cannot get directions to your backyard, you can get directions probably to the front of your house, but certainly not the back. So in some cases, you need to have a favorite and then use a pointing technique or set it as a watch to get a little closer to the actual object.
So if I want to like literally use my bus stop where I work is a pole. Obviously that's probably not going to be marked as anything. How do I manually say use this spot right here?
There's a few ways to do that. The first way is to go to the location and save it as a favorite. When you save a favorite from the current location, it uses the current address as its best guess for the name, but you can type over that if you wish. Another way might be, when you get to work, is to open up transit and find your bus stop and set it as a favorite. And then it'll always remember that bus stop, so you can see that anywhere, you know, in the world. Sure. And then you can also rename a favorite. So if the bus stop is not a great name, then you can call it my favorite work bus stop or something like that. And then it shows up just as another place as you navigate.
Yes. Yeah. So U.S. and Canada for the maps right now, I know APH has limited resources. Are there plans to make this available in other countries at some point?
We never say no, but the U.S. is our primary focus based on the way we are funded. And I would imagine that other countries would likely be supported in a later version, probably with more of an online solution or maybe perhaps an OpenStreetMap type solution.
So one of my questions while we're on that topic, we're talking about different countries and, you know, right now the main focus being on the United States, is the quota fund system. For those who don't know, this is a system where school districts and things like that have a certain amount of money that they can use to get APH-specific products. And it's my understanding that Nearby Explorer will be part of the quota funds at some point. Is that correct?
It actually became part of the quota funds last Wednesday. So it's been a week now, and it's available.
Okay. And if I'm a student, I'm not, but if I were a student, is there a way that I would be able to take advantage of the quota funds in my district being available for Nearby Explorer? Or does that only apply to the school district itself?
It would be managed by the school district, actually. So there would be no direct way that a student could do it, but they could request it to their teacher, and their teacher could go through the process and then get the funds released and have the app available.
Okay. I didn't know if it worked any differently than, you know, because it's an app, you know, I didn't know if it worked any differently than what you would find on, you know, some of your other products.
It works very similarly to other products. The only difference is that there is a product code issued to type in the App Store rather than going right. directly to the App Store to get the program.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah.
It's a very good option for a lot of people moving forward, especially if you can get it on, you know, quota funds.
Right.
You know, great for mobility instructors. What I really like is the way and the effort that has been put into the public transit system. Just from listening to people talk about it and reading the manual, it's, you know, that's a very, I would say, a unique feature of this app, the way it's that the transit system is put together and the way, you know, the app utilizes what's available.
Yes. We have many cities. We don't have all cities supported. I'd imagine it's around 60 or so. And the way it works is the city transit system has to have a publicly available general transit GTFS. I think it's general transit specification feed available for public use. And if they do, we have a way to convert that feed into a format that Nearby Explorer can use. The way we manage this is people request cities that they would like to have on our Nearby Explorer product email list. And then we see if we can obtain those cities. But hopefully, as we begin to add more cities, that many people will find that their city is already in there.
Now, you don't need to do a map update to add cities, correct, with the transit system?
Right. They're separate transit maps, and they update automatically in the background. Those do update frequently. And every time we publish an update, it just happens when you start nearby. It quietly checks and updates your transit feeds.
So a good programmer's work is never done, and I know you guys are already thinking about things that you would like to see in future releases of Nearby Explorer, and there are probably more things you can't tell us than that you can, but can you give us a sneak peek, maybe?
Well, we're very responsive to the feedback we get on our product lists, and some of the things that are most popular right now are category support for nearby places, the ability to show or hide various items on the main screen. We have that on the Android version. For example, you may not want to have speed, altitude, those kind of things on the main screen all the time. And we'd like to bring a way to this platform to hide those if you don't need them. We will be adding the ability to call or visit a place's website. Right now, if you're using Foursquare, you can open up the place in the Foursquare app or its website, but you can't actually get a phone number at the moment. We'll be planning to add those kind of that kind of functionality as well, along with a very large list of items. We're open to anything that people put on the list if it's reasonable and we think we can implement it. Of course, it takes time to get these features in here, but as time passes, the two versions will become more similar, and Both will continue to expand, actually.
What's the best way for people to find all of the related information, such as mailing lists and that sort of thing? Because APH has a lot of resources that are always available.
If you head over to tech.aph.org/NE, so that's tech.aph.org/NE, that's the resource page. It has the manual. It has the link to the App Store. Has the link to the Android version. Everything you need is everything nearby is all there.
I like the fact that you can read the manual separately from the app. That is awesome.
Oh yeah.
I wish every developer would do that.
I'm glad to hear that, because when you develop a product like this, especially for someone in my position where I just really want to write the code and not be so concerned with documentation, the question becomes, well, nobody else has a manual. Why should we have one? Mm. So I'm glad to hear that everybody has read the manual here and that people are still interested in these product manuals, because they are a lot of work and we had to keep them maintained. And the one you get when you have the app on the phone, of course, is the online manual. So it's dynamic. If we change it, you immediately see the change. And
nice heading level navigation, so easy to find what you're looking for.
Yeah, so it's pretty handy little reference there.
Plus, an app like this that is so complex, and it really is, I can see that a person could just get comfortable with the five features that they like and not explore. Or it's like, yeah, I kind of know what that thing does, but nah, you know, I haven't played with it. But if you read the manual, look at the user guide, and then listen to discussions like this one, then you begin to understand maybe what you haven't played with and even get more out of the product.
Absolutely. And that makes selection of default settings very critical in an application like this. In fact, we're considering changing some of these defaults because people have said this is a little too annoying, this speaks a little too much. But we have to consider the people that never change any of these switches or never find the context menus or never really care about the depth of information that you can control. And we try to meet the needs of, you know, the casual user as well as the advanced user with this app.
Yeah, and it gets a lot more complicated when you have that type of situation where you've got somebody that wants everything, you know, all the time, and they want every sort of option customizable as possible, as many of them as they can. But then you've got the other one that's just like, look, I just want to download the app. I just want to use it. And it's a really hard thing to cater to everybody because everybody's so different.
Right, it is.
Well, Rob, I'd like to thank you for taking the time to visit with Scott and myself. There's a lot to talk about, and you obviously know the product. It's the thing that impresses me. I keep talking about APH in glowing terms, and it's because I really like the products because you guys use the products and they are developed frequently. So anyone who purchases a product from APH, it's not just going to stagnate tomorrow.
Right.
You guys are great about keeping things up to date. So
we eat our own cooking.
Thank you for sharing and taking the time. I think we've gotten all of the information that we need. If someone wants to check out the website, you can certainly go to tech.aph.org/NE or check out the show notes here at AppleVis, and we will definitely put a link to the website in those as well. I'm Jamie Pauls, and with me, Scott Devert, Rob Meredith. Thank you all for listening, and be sure and leave comments in our podcast feed as well in the show notes. Until next time, take care, everyone.
This podcast was brought to you by the team at AppleVis. For more information and resources to help you get the best experience from your Apple device, visit the AppleVis website at www.applevis.com, where you can also contact the AppleVis team.